Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. Ho, ho, ho. It's our holiday episode. I am Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, chief TV critic, of course, Santa himself, Mr. Tim Goodman.
Oh, yes. And in that spirit, I'm giving away gifts.
That's right. That's right.
46 presents were delivered last week. Do you know that?
I did know that. Last week.
To needy children.
Last week in our episode that we recorded moments ago.
Moments ago. Literally moments ago.
Because we're liars.
Lying liars.
We're going to pretend that it's Christmas and New Year's time. But in fact, we recorded this in advance because we're not going to do a show on Christmas Day or on New Year's Day because we're liars. But our gift to you is from the FCC, which is... TV networks broadcast things for free over the airwaves, and that programming, while perhaps not as good as some of the stuff that's available for 45 different shows on cable and streaming, there are still 16 shows worth watching as a part of Tim's 16 best network TV series.
They're free
to view,
and arguably, and people have made the argument to me, plenty of stuff left off that they would have liked to have seen.
Yeah, sure.
Hannibal, chief among them. You will not find Hannibal on this list. So if you're going to wait for the 16 to unfold, it's not there.
Don't get your hopes up, Hannibal.
It's not there. And I will start. I'll just say when I was putting this list together, I think I do this separate list because it is a different unlevel playing field that they are working with. They are literally broadcasters. And they have to get the, you know, even though they're not really, except if it's Empire, et cetera, they're trying to shoot for the broadest, biggest audience. Mm. So they want to have as many people as they possibly can. Millions and billions of people. They don't always get it, but that's what they try for. So they have to be broader. You know, you can't really have any nudity. You can swear, but just a little bit. Mm. You can't really be super adult. You can't be really niche oriented because you're going to lose people. And if you are niche oriented, you know that going into it. And maybe that's part of your brand identity for your network. So there's a lot of little things like that. but when I was making the list, it had to be shows that were good at what they were meant to do. And that was one of the, rather than just me thinking like, oh, I'm blown away every week and every season by Fargo. It was like, is this series doing what it's supposed to be doing? And is it doing it well? I mean, that's really the bottom line for the networks, because there's very few. I mean, obviously, I only had one. I had Jane the Virgin is the only one I had on my overall mm-hmm. list. So you're not going to get the same kind of qualitative endorsement of those shows when you come to network. They're again uneven playing field, but they're doing different things. And so, you know, before we go down the list, I just wanted to say I had to look at them in that way. And I will just quickly say the reason that Hannibal's not here is that because I appreciate what they're doing visually. It's a beautiful series to look at and well directed. I never ever liked watching it. And so that's a problem for me. I had a factor that I couldn't lie and say, oh yeah, look how beautiful this is. I never wanted to watch it.
Right.
And it never compelled me to watch it. And some of my critical peers would say that it's this next level of television. And to me, that's when you say that, now you're starting to say, oh, it's kind of like a cable worthy series. And when I watched it, I was like, you know what? This is a good series, but it ain't the other ones. Mm. It ain't cable worthy. It ain't like the top end of what we're talking about on that last list last week. No, not close. So it kind of failed to be high art, and it failed to sort of do what NBC wanted it to do, which was get a lot of eyeballs on it. Mm. And for me, I couldn't do it. So that's why that's not there.
All right, should we go down the list of what is there?
Let's do it.
Number 16 on the CW. A lot of CW shows on this list, by the way.
Yeah, shocker.
Arrow.
Yep. It's funny because a lot of the stuff on this list we've talked about because they're shows that we both like, and you in particular.
I like Arrow. I'm finally caught up with Arrow. I binged mm-hmm. that whole series over the last, it is the slowest binge ever, but over the last year.
Well, that's still a binge some ways.
Yeah, it's many seasons.
Binge.
But now I'm caught up. I've now that they're on a break for a month, I I've watched them all. Yeah, it's a good show. It's interesting when you contrast it with some of the other superhero shows that it's got, even though it shares producers in a world with The Flash, it's got its own rules and its own tone, and they've struggled with it at times. Being, is it too dark? Is it, you know? And I feel like sometimes they're a little too glum, and then they kind of get over it. So, but good cast. They've sort of learned as they've gone, like who are the keepers and who are not the keepers. And it's a fun show.
Yeah, and it's you know, I pair that with you know, it's hard to talk about them separately, but I sort of pair that with and we'll make a little sandwich out of this, because I think it applies to all these shows.
We got three superhero shows here, so we can bring in The Flash, which is at number 14 on your list, and then they're making a Gotham sandwich because you've got Gotham at number 15. So it's got a little superhero trifecta here.
And I think that for the CW shows, they did what they were supposed to do. They delivered on the mythology. You're certainly better at this than I am, because your nerd credentials are so vastly superior to mine. But I think that there are shows that that fans of the comics like, and I think people who like these kind of shows are like, you know, because I'm not all in on these, as we know from Daredevil and on. But like, and I couldn't get into Supergirl, and I tried, and I was like, oh, really? Is it going to be like this every week? Mm. Whereas The Flash, I think it was maybe because there's, you know, as I noted in the thing, like Jesse Martin and Tom Cavanaugh, they're helpful. And Arrow was a little grittier for me, so it's kind of like more my show. But I think those two shows are on this list because they do what they do really well, and together they fit what the CW wants them to do. And I think that when you can kind of seamlessly keep the brand going along that lines of a sci-fi slash show like that, then you're doing your job. Yeah. And similarly, Gotham, I think the Gotham suffers from, and I have, since I'm not so tied into it, and maybe I would love to hear your take on this, I think Gotham, for people who want a full-blown Batman show, it'll never be their show. So they just never want to know, you know, little Master Wayne.
Yeah.
They don't really care about that. Whereas, like, okay, well, that's, you know, they didn't really lie to you. They said he was never going to be there. It's a show without Batman in it. And I think they struggled in their first season. But I think this sort of the rise of the villains concept from this season was a whole lot more interesting. And I thought, okay, this is – it's darker, more fun, and actors can do stuff that it's great to see them stretch and have fun in. And I thought Gotham kind of like became the show maybe it wanted to be in season one.
I would throw in about The Flash that when you say these shows do what they're supposed to do, there's a guy, Tom Brevoort, he's a Marvel Comics editor, who said The Flash is it gets across what it feels like to read comic books in a way that no TV show really has ever done. And I agree with that. And I think The Flash gets the tone right, and it's silly, and yet there's also some emotional weight to it that makes it not just a campy romp, but has some other things going on. And like you mentioned, you know, Jesse Martin and Tom Cavanaugh, so important in grounding that show and making it more kind of believable and trustworthy, because those guys bring their gravitas to the scene. So yeah. Good stuff.
I like that. I like that description, because I think that, yeah, I didn't have the vocabulary for that. But yeah, I mean, it does seem like you're reading that feeling you get when you read it, and it's, you know, it. Yeah, that's great.
There's ridiculous stuff and people with powers and crazy names, but they know it, and so they've got a character like Cisco, who is the designated namer of villains, and he comes up with names because the names are ridiculous. So how do you do that? And the answer is, you've got a guy who's like, oh, I got a name for this guy, right? And you just embrace that, and then all the while you've got Jesse Martin there to give some adult supervision. And the way they've used Tom Cavanaugh in season two, I would actually say one of the interesting things about a comic book show is you can do things like kill off one of your lead actors and then have them also be in the second season playing an alternate version of the same guy, which is actually has been really good. And then led to some there's a really nice scene where Grant Gustin basically is watching Tom Cavanaugh last episode of season two and forgiving Tom Cavanaugh from season one and trying to get on with his life, which it's, some emotional weight for a show that you'd think is just sort of a silly comic book show. So, yeah, they do those. They are comic book shows. They are superhero shows, and they do them very well. And that's to be credited, I think. You know, I've got a friend who is absolutely obsessed with and is very sad that people don't talk about Person of Interest, number 13 on your list on CBS. That this is a show a lot of people wrote off as kind of this another procedural, but it's actually more of a sci-fi show hidden away on CBS.
Mm-hmm. I think he's totally right on that. He or she.
She. And, Laurel. And shout out to Laurel out there.
Good job, yeah. Laurel. That's probably that could be the better or best definition of Person of Interest. But I think that certainly the core of that sentiment, I've always felt like, I remember I was pretty big on this series when it first started in season one. And I think that, it's easy to and I'm certainly guilty of it. It's easy to dismiss CBS shows as procedurals, mm-hmm. and like, oh, it's a formula. They've mastered it. And you know, there's times when I've said, yes, they've mastered it because they're really good at what they do. And that, you know, a lot of CBS shows that are not Person of Interest do exactly what CBS wants them to do. And so good for them. That means you're a well-run machine. And I have a lot of respect for that. But Person of Interest, as always, like your friend said, it's different. It's totally different. And you know, I liked it. I think they've taken risks. They've killed off like characters that were really popular, and luckily for those characters who could go on and star in bigger bigger things, that's great. But you know, it's fun, and I know that the really diehard. I mean, I'm a person who comes in and out, but the really diehard people really want a full blown season. And not for it to end, where it clearly looks like how CBS is treating it is like it's the end. So I'm happy to have it on my list at 13 as it's quote unquote closing out its run. And I say that everybody, if you're a fan, cover your ears because you don't want to hear the truth. But that could happen. But boy, they've put some entertaining hours together. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Number 12. This is a show with fantastic ratings. It's Empire on Fox.
Yes, Taraji P. Henson. Yes, a familiar name. Mm-hmm. Look, it's. I think that it has lost a little bit of its mojo from season one. I will be the first to say that. I think that whole Pepsi tie-in is really annoying. I think they did that because they were on top and they were huge. And Fox said, "You can do whatever you want to do. You're basically the Walking Dead of broadcast television. You're a monster." And so it is our current Death Star. And so they do make some dubious decisions. And I think that they've gotten a little bit crazy. And I think some of their own fans don't like that. So who knows where it's heading. But I think Taraji P. Henson's always there to be stable as Cookie. She's great. Terrence Howard is as an actor, he's very strong and this is very magnetic in that role. But I think, as I said here, it's the music. If you didn't have the music, if you didn't like every week put out like all this amazing stuff, the show wouldn't quite be as good as it is. Because like, you know, I'm not a Scandal fan, but you could argue that Scandal's, you know, a better soap opera than Empire. But it's the music, I think, that differentiated it enough for me to get to number 12.
Speaking of CBS shows that have a little bit extra, Elementary at number 11.
Yeah, one of my faves. I make no apologies for loving Elementary and that my daughter loves it. And she's a Sherlock fan, too. You know, it just delivers. I like the fact that, I like the fact that these guys are getting, you know, Johnny Lee Miller is getting a nice paycheck. But look, Johnny Lee Miller is a really good actor. And as much as I love to watch Benedict Cumberbatch on Sherlock and how well written that is, like there's something about watching a really good actor every week in familiar people. If we back up and we get away from the 46 shows from last week about all this so high art, part of the television is like, okay, entertain me for an hour and, you know, don't exhaust me. Don't make me work too hard, but keep me entertained. And give me familiar people. And I think we lose we lose familiar characters, I should say. We lose track of that. I certainly do sometimes, where it's like, ah, this is comfort. It's like a comfort show. It's like, I know this character. I know this character. I like this little quirky dude. You know, I don't, I'm not going to put them on my top 11 performances of the year. I mean, Johnny Lee Miller could have been there, I think. But like, some of these sub characters are not going to make that list. But I like to visit them every week. Mm. And that's part of what a good basic, you know,
network
broadcast
TV
television.
Show, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it should do. You want to visit with these people because they're interesting characters. So, yeah, I love Elementary. Love the stories.
Number 10. Now, this is, I'd say of all the shows on your list, this is the show that felt like it really did have kind of cable quality ambitions and pretty much delivered. American Crime on ABC.
It did. And it was, you know, when I went down this list, I was like, okay, if you wanted to have that, sort of, did network television become cable quality, this probably would have been number one rather than 10. Well, not one. I mean, you can't displace Jane the Virgin, which we've already disclosed in the previous podcast was number one. But it can't be that good because that's like a feat of engineering that can't be duplicated. But American Crime, as far as for its creative ambition and qualitatively what it was trying to accomplish with these big issues, and race is a huge issue to do, and it also dug up some really wonderful unused actors who I just had never heard of, and I thought they delivered amazing performances. But it probably would have been a lot higher, and it was on some people's list. But for me, the struggle that I had with American Crime was I thought, well, Felicity Huffman's character was so annoying. I struggled with it. So in some ways, what a network show didn't learn from a cable show was nuance. And when you talk about race – And you're pitting these people together and there's a crime, you had to be a little bit – it was a little bigger than I wanted it to be. Mm. That was my only knock on it, Jason, is that the issues were really big and everybody was so staunchly their own way. I struggled with that. There was not enough nuance for me. But still, super well done.
Number 9, The Blacklist.
Yeah, another one of my guilty
pleasures.
Get
your spadering in.
Yeah. I thought as I wrote that, because we talked about it prior to when I wrote it, I thought you would enjoy me saying the line, and James Spader is going to spader the hell out of that
hour.
Oh,
yeah. Spadering is a verb. It's a thing now.
Spadering. You know, then that's the same thing. Like, is Johnny Lee Miller, want to see him, and Lucy Liu, too. I want to see both of them perform. James Spader, dude, makes this show, right? I just – when he does his little soliloquies and just – He makes the words better than sometimes the words really are. You know his character from watching this. You know he's got this fine taste. He's a history buff, fine arts, cuisine. You know, he's a foodie, of course, alcohol, everything that you can think of. Good books. He has all the stuff, and he still is just a badass on the black market. And I love the story. It just never gets old to me.
Number 8, going out strong, I think, Parks and Rec on NBC.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that's kind of super endearing, too. It's it went out the right way. Yeah. Characters we really love. It was an interesting concept to move it forward, and I think it was a satisfying way to, like, I think people thought, hey, that's really creative, even though, you know, other shows have done it. You did a very creative job with it. And B, you sent off our characters in the way I would have want them sent off. So claps all around for that one.
I agree. Number 7, The 100 on the CW.
Yes, and I am late to the game. I've always liked it, but I've told people that, hey, this is really good. This is like a really good show on the CW. I didn't review it originally, and that pilot is in the first season is not very good. It's not bad, but it's not very good. It's, you know, it was easy to say. We had Allison Keen, who was one of THR's reviewers, and her review would have been literally what I would have said, which is like, oh, it's a typical of the CW to have a bunch of 18-year-olds live and all the adults die.
Pretty teenagers on an empty planet, right. Lord of the Flies style, blah, blah, blah.
Very much Lord of Flies. There were things about it in the first season that were like, eh. But if you hung in there in that first season, and I didn't because I came late, but I knew it got better. And I have been ahead on the story and then kind of did the whole look back on it. And when I finally compressed it, boy, it took a big leap about middle of the way, mm-hmm. in that first season. And the second season, they're in total control of their characters. You know, I like everybody there. I think there's in a little bit of a way that we have the Jesse Martin, you know, on
the gravitas on the Flash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if you look at that and Tom Cavanaugh, you can look to similarities on The 100 and sort of see like, oh, right, you've got some older actors who are kind of keeping it down with these younger kids. I don't want to say, but you know what I mean? They're just at a little bit level of,
it's a, you know, if you get a show that it's all pretty 20 somethings, it's like, you know, they're pretty to look at, but you want somebody who's a little bit weightier just to provide that contrast. And you can have that little dynamic, even if they don't listen to their advice, just having that dynamic of, are you a mentor? Should I listen to you? I need to go my own way. It just makes it a much more interesting show to have that dynamic, I think, in there. So it's always good to have an older authority figure in the mix, even on a show that's populated with pretty 20 somethings.
Yeah. And I want to say another thing about The 100 is that I'm a proponent of a show finding itself. I don't think you can always do that because people are going to stop watching, mm-hmm. and they won't come back. But I think this one has rallied enough critics to the cause that said, hey, people, this got better at the end of the first season. And it got really good in this second season, which just, you know, it's about to start its third, mm-hmm. but, And I make a comparison to Battlestar Galactica. I don't think it's quite on that level, but it's they're doing well with this show. The writers know who the characters are. It got darker. It got harder. It got a bigger worldview. The only thing that still troubles me, even two seasons into it, is Desmond was one of my favorite characters on Lost, and so to have him be this character is hard. the American accent.
Yeah.
Struggling
with
that.
That's true.
Nice. But really good show.
Number six, Bob's Burgers. We talked about this last week that you put Archer as your number one animated series. And I said, maybe Bob's Burgers. But here it is the best animated network series. And I totally agree with that.
See, I was able to make peace in the warring tribes.
John Benjamin wins in all cases, though.
He does. And a shout out reminder, it's all sold out now. But Bob's Burgers is coming to SF Sketchfest, mm-hmm. In January, and I will be leading the discussion on stage with this fine cast. So I'll be the moderator on that panel. Very excited for that. Bob's Burgers is really funny. It is the best animated show on broadcast, and a close second to Archer, I think, because Archer's darker and weirder and sexier and violent and stuff like that. But I will say there is weirdness to Bob's Burgers and sweetness too. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I want to reiterate, which as I said in this review, is you really can't mistake its comedy and its vision for anything else. No. Once you see this show and you hear the voices, you know it's Bob's Burgers.
And I put off watching it. I think I might have mentioned this before. I put off watching it for a while because the way it was sold when it was premiering was basically like, hey, people who love Family Guy and American Dad, here's another one of those. And I don't like Family Guy or American Dad. I don't find Seth MacFarlane very. I actually find him more interesting as a guy. I don't know, like singing songs and stuff, and being like a raconteur kind of guy.
Yeah,
but Family Guy, I just find it so cynical and kind of unpleasant. Even though some of it is funny, Bob's Burgers is not like those shows at all. So if that turned you off, you should definitely seek it out because it is. It's sweet and funny and weird. And unlike other animated shows, I believe they record it like together in a studio. And so it's got a little kind of extra electricity in the performances. I guess I would say it's a good show. It's really good.
And I've it's been on for a while now. And, I didn't have like a mea culpa. I just said, I didn't like the first couple of episodes. I thought they went for the first season's run. And particularly the pilot, I thought they were going for fart jokes and, you know, the easy joke was what they were going for at every turn. And it's not even remotely like that now. I mean, when they do those ones, they are hysterically funny. But at the beginning, they were relying on that. When now we realize that they had so much better material. Maybe they were just selling it as a pilot at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a legitimately great show. Number five. Not a surprise that you like this one. This is a great one. Blackish on ABC.
Yeah, just really strong. Yep. And obviously we're going to get to other ones on the list too. But yeah, Blackish, really strong. Great second season. Very funny. What a great cast. And I think that, you know, it and Fresh Off the Boat had the same issue. Can they be funny in their second seasons as they were in their first? And they're funnier in their second one. So it was, you know, props to them. Very excited for Black-ish.
Number four. Now, this is a show that basically has no ratings, but got a Golden Globe nomination. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. And you got it high on your list. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend on the CW.
Yeah, it could be kind of the Hail Mary for them. I think when Jane the Virgin came on, that was obviously a show where I was touting to people that they should, you know, if you've never been to the CW, you should definitely come back to it now because here's this great show. And then so they're branching out to that kind of brand, that kind of audience with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. This is a show, if you saw it on any other channel, it'd be one of your favorites. I think people are not watching it because, you know, some people think, oh, the title is offensive, but it's not that. Clearly, you know, a woman wrote it, she acts in it, she stars in it, she created it. There's a reason that they say that. And then if it was on HBO or if it was on AMC, this would be such a huge sensation, and Rachel Bloom would be like on every magazine cover ever. So it's that show. It's just undiscovered, and it could go away, but hopefully the Golden Globes recognition will help. So seek this one out, people. It for sure, I think people will like it.
Number three, you mentioned it earlier, Fresh Off the Boat.
Yeah, those sophomore comedies. They were so strong in their freshman year, and that's when you think, can they repeat though? Because they milk a lot of episodes out of these shows, and you wonder, can they keep up the consistency? Well, more than ever. And also, again, a nod to a story we linked to in the last podcast when Dan Feinberg and I did the top 11 performances of 2015. He wrote about Constance Wu, who's in this. And she's magnificent. She is – everybody's great, but she's my favorite part of the show. And I this is funny to me. I love the fact that she's only 33, but she plays a very matronly, very funny person. And she's so lovely. It's like – it's her being able to tamp down like her attractiveness and sexiness and all that stuff and then really deliver this character who is so rigid in her ways, but so funny. God, I laugh so hard. I know I'm sort of veering off here, but I laugh so hard at Fresh Off the Boat sometimes. It's a good reminder that shows like that in Black-ish, while not maybe at, you know, Silicon Valley or Veep level, are so good and so funny that people should, if they haven't found them already, definitely check it out.
And that brings us to definitely my vote, and it looks like your vote too, for the best comedy on broadcast TV, bar none, Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Fox. That is so good.
It's so good. It's so smart. And everybody's involved. There's so many working parts. You know, I love the fact that even the smallest character part here, the guys in the background, are so essential to what's going on and deliver funny lines and are funny visually when they're not even saying things. It's just, this is such a well-conceived comedy. And you got to, I love that we all just go with it. Like, oh, the whole department is out on a manhunt. You know, it's goofy. It's a cop comedy. It's hard to do. And I just, every episode you watch, I think, is a little bit more love for the show. And now it's been on for a while, so people can appreciate it. But yeah, I'm also, Jason, stunned when I tell people how much I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And they're like, oh, I don't watch that.
So good. The writing, the casting. It is hands down for me the best broadcast comedy. So, yeah.
I mean, and you know what? There's people who are huge 30 Rock fans, and they're not watching it. And I'm like, what happened? Like, do people just not find the show and they never went back to it because there's too much TV?
Because it's on Fox, or maybe Andy Samberg. You know, I'm not a huge Andy Samberg fan from his Saturday Night Live and videos days, right? But he's not just like watch it despite him. He's great. He's great on this show. He's legitimately great. The character was built by Mike Schur and Dan Gurr, who are the creators of it. It's built for him. It's built for his strengths. They are smart. They're Parks and Rec fans should be watching it because it's the same people who did Parks and Rec who are doing Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And it's a little broader, I guess, than Parks and Rec. But such a great ensemble. Andre Brower doing comedy.
So good.
What a thing to see. What a thing to behold every week from Andre. I mean, great actor, Homicide, one of my favorite shows of all time, and he kills. He is hilarious in this too. It's just, yeah, the whole cast is funny. It's, people should watch it. It's great.
Yeah, once you see what the creators thought, okay, because Andy Samberg is so broad and he's so big and he's not everybody's cup of tea, but to have that sort of like a hose that's gone off and it's whipping around the yard, which is what Andy Samberg yep. is, and then to come to the stern Andre Brower, who doesn't like blink or laugh or anything, it's such grounds the two. They just clash. It's so funny.
Well, like the opening is a parody basically of cop show openings, and everybody's doing something wacky. Mm-hmm. And then they cut to Andre Brower and he just is sitting there looking at you. Every week it kills me. I watch that opening every week because it's so great. It's like wacky people. Andre Brower is very serious. It's great.
It's so good.
And then number one, I mean, we already talked about it last week, Jane the Virgin. Again, what a high bar, high degree of difficulty makes it look easy. What more can you say about it? I mean,
yeah, we don't really need to add anything to it. I mean, it's our moment to reiterate to people that, which we've said a couple of times on this list, which is kind of funny because it's broadcast. You should get these things for free. And so you should be aware of them and be watching them. But, you know, again, there is too much television. Mm-hmm. But as we've said through these 16, like, go find some of these shows. I mean, they're not, some of these are on CW, obviously, and that's not everybody's, that is a stumbling block for a lot of people. I admit that. And the CW knows that all too well. But you have to be watching Jane the Virgin. You should be watching Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And if you're willing to, like, go a little deeper into your sci-fi and the teen life, I should say, then try The 100. It's a better show than you might think it is. Start in the second season. You'll figure it out. But yeah, Jane the Virgin, all you can say here is, like, find it and start with the first season and you'll get what we're talking about. You'll get why we're raving about it and why everybody's so good, from Gina Rodriguez to Anthony Mendez, who is the narrator. Mm. It's the best voiceover narration you're ever going to hear. So find it. I think that people will really love it if they do. And that's really the purpose of this list.
So we're at the last episode of 2015. You have time for a few listener letters?
Let's do that, because 2015 was so, I was so proud of it.
Yeah, I'll power through. We'll just do some quick ones. First, I gotta note the passing of Agent X, William Blake Herron, who has been engaging with us all along, and the ratings actually have been going up, and it was one of the better rated of their new series, but apparently the programmers who greenlighted all these series are no longer at TNT, and so they canceled all of the lowish rated shows, new shows, including Agent X. So that's sad.
You know, as people on Twitter have said, pour one out.
Yep.
Pour one out, because it's a drinking game. Mm-hmm. Pour one out for our good friends at Agent X. But I would like to say, and I hope that that someone appreciates this, and not someone you know who, it lives on my DVR.
Yeah.
So it's not quite dead.
No, it's not, as long as we remember it. And I mentioned on Twitter that it was time that I was going to keep a stiff upper lip, but then I was going to crawl into a secret tunnel beneath Washington, D.C. and have a good cry. And William Blake Herron, the creator of Agent X, our correspondent, his tweet response was, "That's not the message of Agent X. Hide not your sad feelings in secret tunnels. Be joyful like wine freed from the box." Beautiful. Love that guy.
We love that guy, and we want him to succeed almost more than anyone else, because he's just, you know what? Good for him.
Absolutely.
It's just, he, what a tremendously great sport he was. In his honor, I refuse to believe it's over, and it will live on. I will, capacity is always an issue on the DVR, because we are in the too much TV era. I'm going to hold out and keep one. Maybe I'll keep the finale, just that one episode sitting there, just in case one night I come home and I'm thinking, you know what? I got a little extra box wine.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to tie one on and I'm going to have a drinking game. So it's going
to
live there.
Farewell to Agent X. Well, he says it's got a resolution. There's no cliffhanger at the end of season one. So if they don't come back somewhere, that's okay. The story will wrap and that'll be good. So Vanessa from the Plus 44, which is the UK. And the +33, which is France. Interesting. Little channel action happening there.
Yeah.
Vanessa says, big fan of the podcast. I was listening
really?
When Tim was
That's
still
nice.
At the SF Chronicle, but recently rediscovered the podcast after Tim sabotaged the Firewall and Iceberg podcast, which was canceled due to Dan Feinberg moving over to THR.
I had nothing
Your
to
fingerprints
do with that.
Are all over it. Where were you when they killed the Firewall and Iceberg podcast?
Oh, great. I can't wait till that gets out as a conspiracy.
So Vanessa says it was yesterday as we record this, but of course it'll be a little bit in the past, was her birthday and she'd love a shout out. And she's got it. We're reading her letter from her second favorite podcast on the internet. Damn you, Firewall and Iceberg. I would also like to challenge my fellow TV Talk podcast listeners to create their top 10 best episodes list and top 10 moments so I can go back and listen to those episodes I might have missed. Wow, this is a challenge for the best things for the TV Talk machine. Wow.
Oh,
that is crazy. Well, if you've got favorite moments,
scary. Do we have 10
send them
that
in.
Are good? We have 65.
I don't know. I'll tell you what. I'll do a little challenge. If you can send me some favorite moments, send me the episode number, and if you're really good, send me the time, and maybe I'll put together a little montage for New Year's. How about that?
Whoa.
Yeah, but I'm not going to do any research here. So we need the archivists of the TVTM to come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, TVTM.
Send me some time code.
Who has a long beard now?
Yeah, he is. He's been archiving for a long time. So Luke from the 506, that's New Brunswick, Canada.
We love Canadians.
Says, cop, not a cop, has made the big time. In the fall finale of iZombie, the detective said to Liv, he's been treating her as a cop when she's not one. You need to trademark this before it's too late, Luke writes. I think we got the ball rolling when a listener mentioned that it came up on the Flophouse podcast, which is my favorite podcast. So we're just going to roll cop, not a cop. It's been there since the beginning of time. Since there first was a cop, there was also not a cop.
Mm-hmm.
It's
and by the way, I did just for the record, I did get a lot of grief for not including iZombie on there.
Yeah.
I like that show too.
It's a nice show.
There was a lot of, there was like what, five or six
How
CW
many
C- shows.
Yeah,
on
there's
there.
A, like a limit, a cap on
I think it was five on of five of the 16 are CW shows.
Good Lord.
So
if you love CW so much, maybe you should marry it.
I know, right? Right.
So
I'm glad to find that that we've had people who listen to the old TVTM, and then are still not scarred, and they can come find this new one. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate it. OG.
Mm-hmm. Hey, do they have New Brunswick? That reminds me of bowling.
Right? The Brunswick, they're not related in any way.
Oh, okay, lands. Good. Just checking.
Billy in the 405, which he's helpfully said is Oklahoma City.
OKC.
Says, since you talked about The Expanse a couple of times, what do you think about what Sci-Fi is doing with it? They released the first episode early. Now they've released episodes 3 and 4 online immediately following the broadcast of episode 2. It sounds like a weird move. Any thoughts on why they did that?
Uh-oh. That's not good.
Well, they're still airing them. It's like they basically... I have a theory, but I mean, it does seem weird that also the week Star Wars comes out, they're like, and you can watch the next two episodes on streaming. Hello? Anybody? Nerds? Anywhere?
That could be that play too.
I don't know.
Because you have the...
My theory is that the storyline is complex enough that they want to have a kind of a, they want to hook you with kind of binge watching. So like, if you like it, they want to give you some more episodes. They want to like have their cake and eat it too. That's my theory, is that they want to kind of take advantage of binge watching culture a little bit while also keeping the show on air. But it seems weird to me. This seems like a strategy from the beginning, but it seems weird that episode 2 drops and immediately episode 3 and 4 are available online, but they'll also be airing in the next couple of weeks on TV. It's weird. It's weird.
It's an interesting strategy. I mean, I get what you're saying. I mean, because I haven't seen it. So if you're saying that it is complex and they need to suck it up.
Yeah, it's a book adaptation, so there's a lot of world building happening in the first few episodes.
Well, yeah, maybe you're onto something. I mean, maybe it's not, because when they said they're putting them online, that had the Aquarius.
Yeah, it's not a burn off. It's weird. It is like it's strange. I think it's that, hey, if you want to read ahead a little bit, because the first four episodes are the ones that were sent to critics, so I think, you know, they're all completed. And I think they must have thought it could get lost track in the holidays. We're just going to make it easier for people to find them. If they want to binge them, then they're going to be up on it. They can tell their friends. I think somebody at Sci-Fi is like, why don't we try something different with this show and see if it can help? It is certainly weird. And putting the first episode up in advance was also kind of weird, but you know,
yeah, that's been done before too. That's not unprecedented, but yeah, I guess you know, everything helps. It is times of confusion.
So my TiVo has the little, you know, it's tied in with all the on demand and all the streaming services, and so I went when episode two aired of The Expanse. I clicked in on it and it had the first four, and I'm like, what is going on here? And it turns out that was they just popped up on demand as well as on streaming. It's strange. Weird. They're not free. You've got to be a cable subscriber or that. But still, it's anyway, thanks, Billy.
Interesting. Okay. Right.
Let's see. What else do we have here? Ella and the 408 asked, why do cable channels take 9 to 12 months in between seasons? Especially since many of us of a certain age remember when there were only 3 or 4 months in between seasons.
9 to 12 months is not a very long time. Honestly, this is the thing that we've become. If you talk to people who actually make television and they make good television, the first thing that they'll tell you is, please tell your readers that we don't press a magic button and they all come up. I mean, it takes a long time to write it. If you're really going to make something of quality, there's, you know, the networks churn, but I don't remember ever being 3 months because the network season ends in May and it starts back up in September. They're working at a faster rate, sure, but cable wise, this is why we have separate lists. They're better shows. Right. They're qualitatively better.
In the old days, you'd get 26 episodes, but they'd also have 26 weeks of repeats. Yeah. And so you could go, I mean, they were making more episodes, right? So that was, which means they were taking less time to do them. Less care. Yes. There goes to your quality. And then scattering in reruns throughout the year. And the runs don't work like that. They're shorter orders. And they don't do reruns. They run them straight through, right? So that's why. I mean, I think that's why a lot of cable runs get split in two, because they want to have, you know, a couple blocks in the year instead of you just going 9 months.
Right. And when you have a huge show like The Walking Dead, you can do that. I don't think it works with the other ones, you know, as far as ratings. And I don't think that'll hold up. But yeah, but I mean, for example, here's the most current one. Here you have Fargo that's, you know, on a lot of people's number one list. But there's not going to be a Fargo until 2017 because it takes that long. First of all, they have to shoot it in the winter, and winter's over, are going to be over when they're ready to do it. He's only written the first episode. So, and that's a fast turnaround. And so they got to get everybody up there. They got to come up with the concept. They got to cast it, which has to be perfect. So much casting is so important to a success of a show. Write it, cast it. Get the location right, and shoot it, and take your time, and take care of it. You're making a piece of art here. It's just slower. 9 to 12 is actually not that long. I mean, look, Sopranos was gone for a long time, and so was Mad Men a couple times.
Bill in the 905, so it's Ontario, more Canada.
Love the Canadians.
This is every week when I hear you talking about Not a Thing. I think about the newsroom. So many journalists tore apart unrealistic aspects of the show, and my reaction was, you think cop shows are true to life? The journalistic indignation was most likely sincere, but sounded more akin to Casablanca's, I'm shocked that there's gambling going on here. He said, my brother is a police officer. I once asked him what his most common call is, and he said, theft of inconsequential items. Think plastic lawn flamingos. However, you don't need to be a cop to see how fake crime, courtroom, and medical dramas are. The next time a newsroom drama comes along, someone needs to remind TV critics the show is not being realistic. It's probably a good thing. Well, no, I would say we laugh about all that stuff, right? I mean, the cop stuff, the law stuff, and the journalism stuff is kind of belovedly ludicrous. I love how ludicrous the journalism on The Flash is, for example, where the newspaper has this beautiful office and a bunch of 20-somethings work there. And yeah, that's not. Anyway, Bill's favorite Not a Thing is hanging up the phone without saying goodbye.
Oh, yeah. That is troubling to me.
You know, you can say, hello? Hello? Wait, what? Yeah, they just...
That is troubling to me. And I first of all, it's so weird to be a participant in that. I just had that happen the other day. I was talking to somebody, and what I said was that sounds great. And I don't know if she thought that I was going to hang up or I had ended or I was going to hang up, but then she hung up. Wow. And I was like, well, I actually am a person who says goodbye.
Yeah, as you should. That's because you're not.
I don't like to put the phone down. Yeah, but people do put that phone down. So it drives me crazy.
Art from the 425, who says, I'm sorry for making cop not a cop a thing. It was his fault. But this is a nice one. He says, Tim, I want to thank you for being an advocate of the second season of Fargo. I didn't think it would appeal to me, but your building enthusiasm won me over, and I was blown away when I finally gave it a try. I guess I need to circle back to season one next. I'm just an average viewer, so the only thing I know about casting, dialogue, timing, pacing, scene construction, and camera shots is that they all seem noticeably more competent in this show than anything I have ever seen on TV before. I guess my semi-serious question would be, is this the most technically competent show construction on TV? For a normal viewer to notice these differences, that has to mean something.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, both Jason and I are huge fans of Mr. Robot, and that competency there is really amazing. But yeah, I think that Fargo is number one for a reason. It's every element is hitting on all cylinders. The acting, the writing, the directing, cinematography, everything works. I mean, it's just the casting. So there's just stuff that I love how he said that. It's a level of competency. It's noticeably greater than others. I mean, it's true. I mean, it's just, I showed it to some of my students, and of course I was training them to look for stuff like that, but they saw the same thing. They were like, wow, that scene. I mean, there's a scene in the diner in the first episode, with a Waffle Hut, that they were blown away by. And I was like, yeah, this is what happens when you have a skilled director, and a great writer. And, you are in control of the story you want to tell, basically.
Got a couple more here, and then we'll wrap it for the year. Dave from the 513, that is, he says, just north of the holler.
Oh yeah, so I realized now that we got our Kentucky parts messed up.
Yeah,
and there is only one holler. I was corrected on Twitter.
Yep.
The area that I was saying, maybe we'll go visit the holler. He says it's flat. They don't have hollers.
No, but then we got the letter that came in right at the end that was actually from the holler. So,
right.
So anyway, Dave was born in the 212 and grew up in the 201. He wanted to tell us about one of his big opt-out moments. And this is great. So in Being John Malkovich, really good movie.
Yes.
It makes no pretense of being anything other than a fantasy, but there was one point I couldn't accept. Now, okay, imagine a building with low ceilings and a 7.5 floor being used as an office. Okay, believe in a portal that John Cusack uses to sit inside John Malkovich's mind. That's the premise of the movie. I can go with it. Except that the portal kicks you out after 15 minutes on the New Jersey Turnpike. It's your movie, whatever you say. Cameron Diaz travels from Manhattan to anywhere on the Turnpike in 15 minutes. That is just crazy. No one without superpowers could do that. It doesn't matter what time it is. There's no way they could leave the building, get in their car, drive through the Lincoln Tunnel, and meet him as he pops out of the portal in 15 minutes. It's not a thing. Dave from the 513. So thank you, Dave. That's great. Beautiful.
Very angrily put. That's,
well, it's that opt-out. It's like you can accept the premise, but then there are these little things that stick out. You're like, nope, that's not a thing.
That could never happen.
This is a good one. This is another little bit of a rant. Donnie in the 206. So Donnie says, many of my favorite shows have one thing in common, unique filming locations you don't normally see on TV. I was mentioning this last week when we were talking about the Netflix show that's set in Florida. It's the same.
Bloodline.
Yeah. It's like, that's a nice, it doesn't look like every other show. It says, I'm thinking of the New Mexico deserts of Breaking Bad, the authentic Texas streets of Friday Night Lights. Oh yeah. I love that. And the glorious, gorgeous globetrotting of Sense8, right?
Yes.
On the other end of the spectrum, there are some locations I never want to see on my TV again. My apologies to Vancouver, but I'm tired of seeing it portray every city in America. The same goes to you, New York. I've seen enough to last a lifetime. And why, out of all the cities in the entire world, did The Walking Dead set a spinoff in the exotic faraway land of Los Angeles? Probably because it was cheaper to shoot there.
Cheaper, maybe.
My question for you guys, what unique place in the world would you like to see a show film, and what cities do you never want to see again? Do you have any opinions about that?
Oh, I absolutely want more shows to be shot in San Francisco.
I agree.
I love that city. I think, obviously, you know, now as a resident of Oakland, I think Oakland should be shot more. We got a lot of beautifulness here, a lot of grittiness here would work. So those are my local picks for sure.
Yep.
I mean, screw San Jose. Who cares? Nope. Sorry, Ella.
Sorry, 408.
Sorry, 408. And no one wants to go to the 925. Mm-hmm. People in the 925 don't even want to live there. That was mean. That was me and my 415/510.
Get it all out now.
Lashing out.
Once the new year, they can't hold it against you.
They can't hold it against me.
Years.
It's a new year.
Yeah.
I would love to see something. Yes, because the New Mexico, and of course, if you have the right cinematographers to bring that out as part of the show's character, that's important. a lot of shows shoot places where like you could shoot this anywhere. I'm sure Vancouver's part of it. Strangely enough, I do love Vancouver as a city and love to walk around it. The city I would love to have something shot in more is Paris. I want to see more of that. And I want to see the little neighborhoods of Paris. I love the architecture of everything. You don't have to show me the Eiffel Tower. I mean, you can walk by it. I would love for you to walk by it or actually have some creps while you were there. It was in the background. That's great. Yeah. I just want to go into the areas, and I want to see more of those.
Yeah, that's great. I agree. I like Vancouver as a city, but we're at this point where any show that's set in Vancouver, I recognize like every plaza. Every restaurant front, whether it's the CW shows or the X-Files or Stargate, or in fact, there's a great joke on there's a latter day episode of Stargate where somebody comments about why the people who built the Stargates really liked evergreen forests, because like literally every planet looks like Vancouver because they shot it in Vancouver. And the X-Files is like the first few seasons of the X-Files are all there, and then all of a sudden it looks really different. It's because they moved it to LA, and it's like, oh, why are things dry now? Unique place. I'm going to second San Francisco. I think that's a good one. You know what? I cannot get enough of shows shot in Hawaii. I think that's it's always nice to see shows shot in Hawaii. It's, you know, it's not that far from all the people working in Hollywood. You know, they can jet out there. Like Lost really benefited and was able to be sort of everywhere in the world, but had that jungly kind of feel. And downtown Honolulu can double for cities too. But it's also just as a character on its own, whether it's Hawaii Five-0 or like Magnum PI back in the day. I like Hawaii shows. I think that's fun.
All right, I agree with that. That'd be awesome.
All right, quick one. Zach on Twitter, we both got tagged in this. I listened to every episode of TVTM in the last week. What have you done to me? We told him to sit down and
don't do that.
Don't do that. But thank you. It's very nice. And then we've got Alan in the 660.
Where's that?
Oh, I
that is satanic. Nearly
almost. This is the Western Missouri, Northern and Western Missouri. So it's Allen in Missouri.
I don't think we've had anyone from the area there.
I don't know. You may have made that nearly satanic joke before, though. So maybe that was it. I don't know.
Mizzou.
Here it is, though. This is great. Love the snarky, breezy tone of your podcast. It was the end of Firewall and Iceberg that inspired me to search for replacements. Again, the body's not even cold, Tim. Come on.
I didn't even do it. It wasn't me.
Yours is the best I found. Aw, that's very nice. And I get to hear about Dan from time to time.
Yes, Dan is alive and well.
I don't know
why. We've got him in a little corner in the box.
I don't know why you don't have him on now and again. Maybe we will. I don't know. I think there's some hope that the Hollywood Reporter might even try to get you guys to do some podcasting together, but we just don't know. We don't know what's going to happen.
We don't know.
Dan's contract status with the podcasting community, with iTunes, is just, they're talking about it. So, you know, that was a great podcast. Love those guys, Alan Sepinwall and Dan Feinberg. And
for the record, I think they should still have their show.
I agree. I think it's a shame that it had to end, and maybe one day it will come back. Who knows?
Yes.
But yes, we agree that it's a shame that podcast does not still exist.
We're happy to take you on, though.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we will. We will accept all refugees from Firewall and Iceberg.
Yes.
But and that was a great show.
Is it Mizzou? Should we say Mizzou?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I've never been to Missouri.
I don't think I have either.
Okay.
He's
our stand-in there.
Yeah, sure.
He's our
representative now.
Mm-hmm. He's representing.
Well, he's got the area codes and stuff, so I guess that's part
I'm
of the breezy
the
tone.
660, though. Yeah, I like that. That's a good one. But where are you from, Matt?
660.
Oh, where did you do it? Yeah.
So he agrees. He's been annoyed by empty coffee cup props for years.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
the luggage one from last week or 2 weeks ago was good too. Yeah. That was good.
I found some prop masters on Twitter and voiced my complaints. They gotta love that. one of them seems somewhat receptive to weighting them with Play-Doh or dried paste or something like that. But I also got feedback from the prop masters that the actors should do a better job of making the cups look full. Act like it's full, actors.
I like that idea a lot.
And Ellen says, I disagree that an actor should be expected to do expert mime work while trying to deliver lines, hit their marks, and emote. It's very difficult and impossible for most people to make something light look heavy. Why not just make the prop have some heft? I'm with you, Alan. Just make it a little, just put some Play-Doh in the bottom. Brilliant.
And
a beanbag.
I'm of the belief that let the other people do it.
Yeah.
Come
well,
on,
that is
actors,
brilliant.
Act.
If I was a set designer, that's exactly what I'd say. Act. You're an actor.
Yeah.
Act like
you're
it's heavy.
Actor. Act like it's heavy. It's acting.
That's it. We've got a couple to go out on here. Design Geek Jess from the 617 has a comment, which is, I love that to spader is now a verb. I love Mr. Spader and have for years. Many friends thought I was insane to swoon over him as Steph instead of Andrew McCarthy as Blaine in Pretty in Pink, but I just think it meant my good taste developed early. Thanks for the addition to my vocabulary. Now the request. In addition to sharing Tim's love of design, I also share Tim's love of wine. All this talk of box wine and capital C champagne is making me thirsty. Any chance Tim can give us some wine pairing recommendations to go along with his year-end lists? Something from New Zealand for Mr. Robot, since their wine is technical. A delightful Gruner Veltliner to go with Fresh Off the Boat. A dark and brooding Syrah to go with The Leftovers. Any thoughts?
Oh, well, I could maybe pen something. I could pen that. That's something you gotta take.
That's like a story.
A lot more time.
That's practically a story idea. Wine.
Well, look, I've always wanted to do a podcast about wine. So
Yeah, well, you got to test the wine. That's the brilliant thing about it.
Yes, exactly.
I ran out of my box wine from Agent X. I'm gonna miss it.
Did you really?
Oh. Yeah, we drank the whole box. It was pretty good.
Well, you know, we had a thing amongst friends for a long time where we had one box of wine, and you would always bring that to somebody's house. That was when they had a party. That was your gift.
The box,
and you would leave it there. Yeah. And it's a joke that only gets funnier in time.
Yeah, sure. Well,
because sometimes you've had that box wine for literally 10 years.
Yeah, well, it's aged, well aged in the plastic bag,
and you bring it out at the right time. You're like, here you go, buddy. Yeah. Oh, I'll say the box
it was
wine
pretty good. It was pretty good wine. It's nice. It's actually the nice thing about the box wine is that you can have a glass of wine. Whereas if you open the bottle, it's like, oh man, I got to drink this wine, which is not the worst thing in the world. But sometimes you don't want to drink like a lot of wine; you just want a little glass here and there. And I get paranoid that it's going to go bad. But in the box, I don't care.
Oh, it's not going to go bad.
Yeah,
you
know.
You can leave it out for a couple of days; you're fine. It's a myth. It is. I mean, some of it's maybe it's going to, but you're good for a while.
All right, here we go. John from the 9 to 5, where people have to work. the Dolly Parton 925. Right. Merry Christmas, Tim and Jason. Thanks for keeping the podcast going. It's been a great year. Tim's top 46 list might be his best one yet. As an iPad user, I appreciate the way the Hollywood Reporter formatted it on one page. No clicking required, no freezing.
Me too.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So
I was impressed with that.
Goodman's top 5 lists. He's made a top. Number 5, best TV shows of 2007. What a year. The Sopranos and The Wire in a shootout for the top spot, plus the debut of Mad Men. It was an abundance of riches, literally.
Ooh, nice.
Speaking of which, number 4, Tim's Letter to Santa, 1978. A Star Wars action figure, a BB gun, safety goggles, and world peace. Number 3, to-do list, November 2009. Mow the lawn, clean the gutters, remove the pizza from the roof. Number 2, BevMo, yes. Christmas 2014. Johnny Walker Black, Peter Michael Cabernet Sauvignon, Oakville au Paradise, and Merlot for what's his name? I don't know. Joe Garofoli is his name.
Yes.
And number 1, what to pack for the TCA Summer Press Tour 2011, 18 pairs of underwear, 2 shirts, 1 pair of shorts, 2 bottles of Tanqueray, Xanax, aspirin, OxyContin.
Wow. There's a lot that's known about me. Apparently, and my peccadillos.
You don't need the Xanax. You just bring some Maisie DVDs, though.
Oh, Maisie. And I still need the Xanax, but Maisie is so good,
Failing a last-minute series of episodes and time codes from fans, this will be our last item of 2015. It is Hobo Eric. Our favorite hobo.
Well, it's apropos. That was a very strong list, by the way.
John from the 9 to 5. Yes. Very nice.
Thanks, John. I'm sorry I disparaged 9 to 5.
Yeah. He was gonna give me the Johnny Walker Black, but I don't do the hard stuff. It's wine and beer for me. That's where I go.
Yeah,
that's why
exactly.
William Blake Heron
and Bubbles
from Agent X gave me the you know, I got some beer and some wine out of Agent X.
Our design
Design Geek Jess, yes?
Yeah. Bubbles.
Bubbles.
Key. Bubbles are a key to the next not just at the New Year. Yeah. Have them all the time.
Sure. Why not? Hobo Eric says, I would like to thank Tim for his gift of an end-of-year list. I will be in the 408, 209, 916, and 415 this time next week. Wow. And so by the time he's here, this episode won't be out yet, so he won't hear this until later, but that's fine. We're going to deal with it anyway. I would like to know if either Tim or Jason would like some treats delivered from the UK. Let me know and I will deliver. So what do you think? What would be your favorite treat delivered from the UK? Do you have a favorite?
Some Cadbury? I would like a super lovely woman with a British accent. Oh. Can that be delivered? Nice. Do you have a really attractive sister?
Nice. Not the Scottish accent? You go with the English accent over the Scottish accent?
Oh, well, I like all accents from all over the world.
Bring something accented, basically.
I'm the United Nations of lust.
And I will say, Hobo Eric, I want the McVitie's chocolate hobnobs, digestive biscuits.
Oh, see, that's nice. I asked for
I'm married. I don't need to. I just enjoy Scottish accents on Outlander instead.
I know. That's very nice. Very good. Yeah. And it was nice of Hobo Eric to offer to bring us things. Yeah.
I suppose I could really answer him on Facebook, but you know, that would be, we answer all of our letters.
Tim is famously not social. Yeah.
Famously.
We just harken back to us at a baseball game one time.
Yeah, that's right. We shared a moment and then we thought
I was ignoring you. I was not ignoring you.
No, yeah, we'll totally do that Hootenanny meetup thing in 2016, right?
No, you know what? I do want to do that for no other reason than, well, I want to see people. I like people in limited capacity. But I have a closet full
of swag.
Yeah. I got to get rid of it. It's growing.
Maybe. You know what it's we should growing. Do is we should sometime when Dan Feinberg is visiting the Bay Area, we should do it then, because then we're going to get all the sweet, sweet Firewall and Iceberg fans coming to it.
Yes.
We can steal them.
That.
Body's not even cold, Tim. Body's not even cold. Why'd you kill it?
I didn't do it. I can hear Dan in the back.
That's right. There's nothing in the trunk.
What's that sound? I didn't hear that. It's my dog.
All right. Well, we did it. 2015. It's in the books.
Right. It's done.
Well, thanks to everybody out there. We like I said, we're not going to be answering letters for a little bit because Tim's about to go in residence for the Winter Press Tour. But if you would like to send letters, we'll queue them up. Or if you want to send your favorite items of the year, please, with episodes and time codes. Maybe I'll do a little thing for that. Anyway, you can reach me, Jay Snell, on Twitter, or you can post on Facebook at facebook.com/TVTalkMachine, or just send us an email, podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. We're at TVTM on Twitter, and Tim is at Bastard Machine on Twitter. That's it. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, it was great. And Tim, good luck in L.A.
Yes, I will throw me a line down there. We will podcast down there eventually, but I will hopefully not be drowning in more TV down there, and I'll just be drowning in bubbles. And good red wine.
Drowning in bubbles. Excellent. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next year.